You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
All right, which one of you did it? Which one of you motherfucking groomers took those humpback whales to Drag Queen Story Hour or Pride or the public library? That's how this works, right? Having gay sex, much less being gay, that doesn't just happen. It's not something a member of a species just does. Someone's got to take you to a Pride parade or show you an LGBT book about gay penguins in a school library, or you got to see those lesbian moms in that one Pixar film, or a couple of gay dads in an IKEA commercial, and then gay sex pops into your head. Then you want to do it. Which is what's so confusing about these gay humpback whales. Big news over the weekend, two male humpback whales were observed having sex, photographed having sex, near Hawaii in 2022. The Guardian had a headline for the ages, "Humpback sex photographed for first time and both whales male." Also love the subhead at The Guardian. Two same-sex marine giants captured copulating in amorous encounter off Hawaii coast. Amazingly, according to researchers, this was the very first time, the only time, humpback whales have been observed having sex. First time any humpback whale copulation has been observed at all. Even sightings of humpback whale dick? Extremely rare. Also from The Guardian, the penises of male humpback whales are usually concealed in what is known as a genital slit to make the whale more streamlined while swimming. An unsheathed penis has only been witnessed a small number of times in the past, usually when a whale is pissing. Scientific American goes into more detail about this specific sexual encounter observed by scientists between these two male humpback whales. Whale B had inserted his penis into whale A's genital slit, the opening that sheathes the penis when it's not extruded for mating. The penetration observed was very shallow because, as Stephanie Stack, a researcher at the Pacific Whale Foundation, told Scientific American, the humpback whale's penis is quite large. All right, if you are a gay human being of a certain age, one of the things you remember from your gay childhood is listening to TV preachers say that homosexuality is so disgusting, not even animals do it. Once these preachers were presented with evidence, a mountain of evidence, that in fact animals do it, other animals do have gay sex, exclusively homosexual orientations have been observed in other animal species. 10% of male sheep, aka rams, refuse to mate with ewes, female sheep, but will ram the shit out of other rams exclusively. Anyway, when presented with this evidence of actual homosexual sex and homosexual orientations in the animal kingdom, the same preachers who had been insisting gay sex was so disgusting, not even animals do it, turned right around, turned on a dime, and started to say that homosexual sex is so disgusting that animals do it. And we are not animals, the TV preachers thundered. For the record, we are in fact animals, and we are not the only animals that have homosexual sex and homosexual orientations. 24 years ago, biologist Bruce Bajamil brought out his groundbreaking book, Biological Exuberance. As the New York Times reported, Bajamil's book pulled together a colossal amount of previous piecemeal research and showed how biologists' biases had marginalized animal homosexuality for the last 150 years, sometimes innocently enough, sometimes in an eruption of anthropomorphic disgust. Courtship behaviors and sex between two animals of the same sex were persistently described, the New York Times continues, in the scientific literature as mock or pseudo-courtship or just practice. Individual populations or species were considered to be entirely heterosexual until proven otherwise, Bajamil observed, as a result of the homophobia and heterosexism common among biologists. And he's right. Bajamil has the receipts. He quotes a biologist who studied sheep. Remember all those gay rams? That biologist said, "I still cringe at the memory of seeing old D ram mount S ram repeatedly. To think," this biologist wrote, "of those magnificent beasts as queers, oh God." You know, I gotta say, these photos we now have of these humpback whales having gay sex. The only evidence we have of humpback whales having sex at all ever, and it's all gay evidence. I do like to call out double standards on this show, and I'm going to call one out now. For decades, bigoted zoologists and biologists assumed that animals never had gay sex, unless they had incontrovertible proof, proof they could not ignore, of homosexual sex between males of other species. But absent that kind of proof, species were, as Benjamin says, considered to be entirely heterosexual until proven otherwise. By that standard, one I'm about to embrace, actually, just for the humpback whales, we have to declare humpback whales an entirely gay species until some proof emerges that they have straight sex. I mean, all the evidence we currently have of humpback whale sex is gay sex, so by the logic of all those biologists quoted in Benjamin's book, all humpback whales are gay until someone can prove otherwise. All right. Humpback whales were hunted nearly to extinction in the 19th and 20th centuries. Their numbers plummeted from the hundreds of thousands down to just 500 animals by 1950. Bans on commercial whaling have brought those numbers back up, and current estimates put the population of humpback whales worldwide at 135,000. That's good news. And since humpback whales aren't clownfish, they can't change sex, I guess we have to concede that humpback whales aren't always on the dick. At least the boys. It's not like gay humpback whales can access IVF treatments in Alabama or anywhere else, so we can safely assume humpback whales, we can infer humpback whales are having straight sex too, but we don't have any evidence. The rule is pics or it didn't happen, humpback whales, not kids or it didn't happen. So, no pic of straight humpback whale sex, so no proof of straight humpback whale sex. I'm going to stick to what I said a minute ago. All humpback whales are gay for now until proven otherwise. I really enjoyed following this story over the weekend, but it didn't take long before it was fed into the online outrage machine. Turns out whale A, the bottom whale in this encounter, was 15 years old, and whale B, the top whale in this encounter, was 30 years old. This age gap was unacceptable to the age gap Discord crowd online, and it was very amusing to watch people try to cancel whale B over the weekend. Not as amusing as watching people try to bring whale A and whale B to Drag Queen Story Hour. That would be very amusing, but amusing nonetheless. All right, coming up on today's show, the little lady who started the Great War over Polyamory joins me, Molly Roden Winter, author of More, a Memoir, the book that launched 1,000 think pieces about polyamory. Molly is here to talk about what it's like to have been at the center of this controversy over the last couple of months. We talk about the assumptions people make about women in open marriages, that they're miserable and just doing it for their husbands, and a lot more. Some of my conversation with Molly is on the micro version of the show that you'll hear for free, but if you want to hear my entire conversation with Molly Roden Winter, you're going to need to subscribe to the Magnum Savage Lovecast at savage.love. That plus tons of your questions, lots of my answers, coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Talkspace, therapy made easy. Get $80 off your first month when you go to talkspace.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by the Meridian Trimmer, the very best tool for trimming your body hair. Go to meridiangrooming.com and use the code SAVAGE for an exclusive 15% off.
Hi, I am a 27-year-old woman. About 5 years ago, I got divorced because I live in Utah. You can guess what religion I am. Now I'm fucking a lot of older people, a lot of older women, a lot of older men because I'm bisexual. I find these people at bars and stuff. I'm sober, and usually the people I hit on are not drunk off their ass, or I won't talk to them. But I am wondering your tips for hitting on people older than me. Because I'm 27, and I usually hit on people 10-plus years older than me. They're more respectful in bed, and they're also better in bed. I guess my question is how to keep people interested of that age group if they're friends with benefits. I know how to do it with my age group. Do you have tips for hitting on older men and women and how to keep them interested for a while so that I can keep my sex needs met?
I kind of love the idea that there are like older people bars out there where you're going to pick up these older men and women. Like there are, you know, leather bars or ABDL bars or puppy bars. Keep putting yourself out there. Keep going to the places where you've had some luck, had some success, meeting older people who are interested in you. Speaking on behalf of the older people community, I don't think there's any shortage of older men and women who would be into a hot 27-year-old, recently divorced woman who isn't looking for something complicated or entangling. Whether someone you've just slept with is interested in sleeping with you again or sleeping with you on the regular is an entirely separate issue. You know, some of the people that you meet, some of the people you pick up, some of the people you go home with are going to really dig you, dig how you taste, dig how you smell. You're going to vibe, you're going to click, and they're going to want to see you again. Not everybody's going to feel that way. You don't feel that way about absolutely everybody that you sleep with. I'm sure you've slept with some people where you were like, all right, that was meh, or that was bad, and I don't want to fuck that person again, and I'm not going to fuck that person again. Some people may have the same reaction to fucking you, and that's fine, and you take it in stride. If you think you're doing something wrong, if you're not just having meh sex with someone or multiple people, but inflicting bad sex on them, well, then you need to engage in some introspection and maybe a course correction and solicit some feedback from regular sex partners about what it is that you're doing in bed that might work for them, but other people might be put off by. And if you can tweak that or adjust that, maybe you'll have more people wanting seconds, thirds, and fourths. As for letting them know that you're not looking for commitment, that you recently got out of a marriage, that you would like a regular connection with a little stable of old folks in your old folks' petting zoo, just say that out loud so that the person that you're sleeping with can make an informed choice about whether they want to keep sleeping with you. If somebody is fucking you, somebody's 10 years older, some hot older woman, hot older man is fucking you and they could see themselves falling in love with you, knowing that that's not an option, knowing that's not something that you want, for them to make that kind of emotional investment, for them to invest those kinds of hopes in you, yeah, if they know not to do that, they're less likely to do that. Or if they feel like hanging out with you is prying their heart open in a way that they can't control, well, they may choose not to keep hanging out with you so as not to wind up getting hurt themselves, but also to respect your stated boundaries around what it is that you're open to and interested in. So, seems to me that you're doing everything right, except maybe blurting all that out about what you want, what you don't want. You're going out there, you're meeting people, you're fucking them. Some of them are going to want to fuck you again. Some of them are not going to want to fuck you again. Some of them you're going to want to fuck again. Some of them you're not going to want to fuck again. You got to find the overlap. You got to find the people who want to fuck you again, that you want to fuck again, who understand what it is that you want from the people that you're fucking and what it is that you don't, which will require you to use your words. We talk a lot here about spicing up our sex lives, trying new things like trying it in the car or trying it in public. But sometimes a comfortable and familiar place is the best place to try it, the best place to do it, a place where you can fall asleep right afterwards. For me, that place is on top of my Helix mattress. We have one in our main bedroom, one in our other main bedroom, and one in our guest room, who are our very special guest stars. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection. That's ours. That's the mattress we have. The newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even mattresses made just for kids. To figure out which mattress is right for you, take the Helix Sleep Quiz to find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And then your personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. But you will get, with your mattress, a 100-night sleep trial. You can try out your new mattress, see how your body adjusts, and if you decide it's not the best fit, you are welcome to return it for a full refund. Helix offers models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side, like me, or models with more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. Helix mattresses all come with a 10 or 15-year warranty, depending on the model. model. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazines. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to fix for improving your sleep. And right now, for my listeners, Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage to get 20% off and those two free pillows. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. So I'm a 23-year-old gay male living in Chicago who hasn't been sexually active in the past 2 years. And I'm finally at the point where I'm ready to change this and finally have my come spring up. My few sexual experiences in college left me underwhelmed and unexcited about being sexually active. I think this is mostly because I was not super attracted to the people I was having sex with. I'm a really tall, muscular guy, like with a pretty similar build and features to Jacob Elordi, for example. So I have no shortage of guys that are paying me attention on apps or bars. And even when I meet an attractive guy at the bar or make out or dance with him, I find myself losing interest really quickly. And I also feel pretty overwhelmed at the prospect of talking to him about my lack of sexual experiences and, you know, lack of openness. I know that communication is key to great sexual experiences, but I just feel anxiety about talking about this. I'd always told myself that I wanted to wait for a comfortable relationship to explore my sexuality more, but I'm just kind of tired of holding out for this guy. I have dozens of guys I've met over the past year who are really into me that I could just reach out to, but I feel like I'd be lowering my standards to have sexual relationships with them. Am I the problem? How can I get out of this analysis paralysis and finally enter my period of sexual liberation?
So all of these guys who've expressed interest in you that you could reach out to, so these are guys that you at least got to know well enough while you were dancing or making out at the bar to exchange phone numbers or follow each other on Instagram. You have a way of connecting with these guys. Connect with some of these guys. Go the fuck out with some of these guys. You don't necessarily have to have sex with them, but you could reach out to these guys who are into you and reach out to the guys who are into you that you are into as well. And then hang out. Go to the, you say you live in Chicago, go to the lake, go to Hollywood Beach, hang out, see if you get to know them a little bit better, that you don't wind up catching some sort of feel for them, some sort of attraction, some sort of vibe that makes you want to be physically intimate. You're 23 years old. You've had some sexual experiences. They weren't great. You had sexual experiences in college with guys you weren't super attracted to. If you are Jacob Elordi moving through the bars in Chicago, I'm sure you have a lot of guys approaching you, coming up to you, coming at you. And not every guy who comes at you is a guy that you're going to be attracted to. One or two of them must be. But if there's something about a guy coming at you that is a turnoff for you somehow, then it's on you to approach guys that you think are attractive. And if you're tall and you're muscular and you look like Jacob Elordi, you approaching a guy you think is attractive, you're most likely going to get a good reception from a guy who is psyched. If you're as hot as Jacob Elordi, there are probably guys who think you're out of their league and are into you and would approach you, but they've already shot themselves down in advance for fear of being rejected by somebody as hot as you claim to be. And I'm just taking your word for it. So approach those guys. Approach guys that you think are hot. Maybe just shifting that dynamic. Instead of you waiting for guys to come up to you, you're going up to guys. Maybe just reversing the flow of the usual interactions will give you a different feel or feeling or desire about what to do next. And maybe then you can have your come spring up. But what you're really going to need to do here, whether what I've just advised you to do is the right approach or not, what you do absolutely need to do here is start pushing yourself outside your comfort zone. The next time you're on a dance floor, making out with a guy, and you find yourself losing interest, push past that feeling. Maybe you're losing interest because you don't like the taste of their spit. Maybe you're losing interest because they said something stupid and disqualifying about voting for Donald Trump. Who knows? Whatever it was. And the loss of interest is legitimate and not something that you can easily reverse or flip. Or maybe this loss of interest is some self-protective mechanism that kicked into gear after those negative experiences that you had in college where you went through with it and you didn't feel great about it afterwards. And there's some kind of circuit breaker that began to kick in where you don't go through with it or you don't let yourself go through with it to protect yourself from that kind of disappointment or shitty experience. And the only way to disable that particular type of circuit breaker is to push past it and then have, hopefully, fingers crossed, some positive experiences that reset your expectations about what is possible with a guy that you had a good feeling about and just met. So I suspect self-sabotage here, self-protective self-sabotage. You had some experiences in college, didn't feel great about the sex or the men or yourself after, and you are now in your own way because you didn't like how that felt. And you don't want to risk feeling that way again, but you're blocking potential positive feelings and good sex that you might have with people that you are into to protect yourself from the bad sex you had with people that you weren't into 2 years ago. Got to carve some new neural pathways. You've got to have some positive experiences. So here's my homework. Go to the bars. Go out. Be hot. Find somebody you think is hot. Approach him. And then dancing together, making out, whatever it is you're doing, if you get to that point where you just feel like, I'm losing interest, stick around. Fake interest and see if genuine interest doesn't kick back into gear. So many of us could really benefit from some therapy. It shows your commitment to your mental health and it pays off for a lifetime. But the hardest part of getting started with therapy is finding the time. That's why I recommend Talkspace. By doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easy, accessible, and affordable. You can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. Talkspace can help with any specific challenges you might be facing with licensed therapists in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, substance abuse, relationship issues, and much more. And with Talkspace, there is no need to commute to appointments. You will not have to miss time at work or line up childcare to attend your sessions. It's mental health care made easy, mental health care therapy brought to you. Talkspace lets you send messages to your therapist so you don't have to wait for your next session. And again, Talkspace is affordable and in-network with most major insurers. And as a listener of the Savage Lovecast, you will get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/savage to match with a licensed therapist today. Do not put it off another day. Go to Talkspace.com/savage to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/savage. We're going to take a quick break from your calls to speak with Molly Roden Winter, author of the New York Times bestseller, More, a memoir of open marriage. She lives in Park Slope, Brooklyn with her husband and two part-time roommates, also known as her sons. Molly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be here.
So when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe at the height of the Civil War, she was the author, of course, of Uncle Tom's Cabin, which helped make the case for ending slavery and the case for the war, many people felt, Lincoln looked at Stowe and said, "So you're the little woman who wrote the book that made this great war."
Whoa.
I am not comparing myself to Abraham Lincoln, but I do feel a little bit like I'm talking to Harriet Beecher Stowe right now. You are the woman who wrote the book that, well, didn't take us to war, but opened a new front in our never-ending culture wars, launched a million think pieces. What has it been like to be Molly Roden Winter right now in the center of this storm about polyamory?
Yeah. Oh, I love the comparison. I mean, that's a great honor. I think my mother wrote her master's thesis about Harriet Beecher Stowe, actually, so she'll love it too. Yeah, it's been really interesting. I think that it's kind of what I, not exactly what I expected when I wrote the book. I thought I would ruffle some feathers, but I was noticing in my 15 years of practicing polyamory that most of the stories I was seeing were not about people that were like me in terms of being kind of like, quote unquote, for lack of a better word, mainstream, normal appearing, kind of like, you know, I pass as monogamous.
what we like to call socially monogamous. People
socially monogamous
are perceived to be monogamous because people just assume couples are monogamous, especially married couples with kids, unless they speak up and say that they are not monogamous. Just like people assume people are straight unless they say they're gay.
Right. So people didn't think they knew anybody monogamous. And now suddenly they're like...
non-monogamous.
Non-monogamous. Sorry. Yeah, exactly. And now they're like, oh, maybe I do. You know? So anyway, I knew I would ruffle some feathers, but I also think what's happening is that there's a lot, it reminds me so much of everything you've been talking about in your last few episodes, Dan, about, you know, this push to take the vote away from women, for example, or all the different ways in which the increasing assertion of women that we are whole people with thoughts of our own and a perspective that needs to be listened to, really listened to, is so threatening to the powers that be. And so the idea of a mom of two kids who, you know, looks like everyone else might be infiltrating and spreading this message that women can be sexual subjects, not just sexual objects, is so, I think, horrifying to a lot of people. So that's one of my angles anyway. I'm not sure. What do you think? Why is this happening, Dan?
Well, I think we have to credit it to the PR department at your publisher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Got giant pieces in The New Yorker, The New York Times, The New York Post, Wall Street Journal, which then kicked off basically the think piece industrial complex to really pick over the book. One of the criticisms I've read out there, and I was curious what your response to that would be, you're honest in the book about the fact that it was sort of your husband's idea, or you went to your husband when you were attracted to another man, and he said, that it turns me on to hear about this, go for it.
Yeah.
And people have suggested, people have written, I've read the book, I don't think it's an accurate or fair interpretation of the journey and the unpacking of what is a really complicated emotional process, moving from monogamy to non-monogamy.
Sure.
I don't think that's fair, but can you address that this was all for a man's pleasure? Like you just said, that you're, part of what you're asserting here is that fuck the patriarchy, women have agency, women are people and individuals and can make their own choices, but is this a choice you made for your husband?
Yeah, no, I wanted to show the complexity of it to the degree that I could, because, you know, there are scenes where I'm in therapy asking my therapist, wait, this was my idea, right? Like, I wasn't sure sometimes, because I was trained by my own mother and the mother before her, right, to be, you know, play within the rules. And so I did ask permission. I was accustomed to being a sexual object in many ways. If you talk to any woman of my generation in particular, you will know that we swallowed a lot of objectification for a long, long time, which is why, you know, some people see the Barbie movie and they're like, oh, dear Lord. And I'm like, no, that was really it. That was the 80s and 90s. Like it's historically accurate. And I'm still kind of deprogramming myself. You know what I mean? We all are.
It was interesting reading the book. You did what people are constantly telling me that everybody who's attracted to somebody else when they've made a monogamous commitment is supposed to do. You went to the person that you had made that monogamous commitment to and talked about it and got their permission, which is what everybody agrees. Everybody who's thinking about, you know, wants to revise the commitment that they made needs to do. But then that spun in the criticism of the book of seeking a man's permission.
Yeah.
And so the man having control, as opposed to you being equal individuals in a committed relationship who have obligations emotionally, sexually to each other that aren't necessarily gendered. But I did note reading the book, you went to your husband, you got his permission. You went to a friend hoping to game it out to get permission. And what you got was shamed. Then you went to a therapist to get permission.
Yep.
When did you finally give yourself permission?
That was the best part about my therapist, you know, and I tell people, if your therapist tells you what to do, get a new therapist, because ultimately it's not about finding out what to do. It's about looking within yourself. And what I realized is that I had been seeking permission. I had been so worried about pleasing everyone else for my entire life to the point that I didn't even know what I wanted. And so I had to go out and experience things in order to figure it out. Don't get me started on the movie Poor Things, because I just watched it 3 nights ago and I can't stop thinking about it. I will just go on record as saying I loved it. But to me, it was very much about that same idea that a woman first has to unlock her own sexual agency and become a sexual subject in order to unlock all the rest. That our body is kind of a gateway to our experience of the world. And when we don't feel ownership over our own body, we don't feel ownership over any part of ourselves. So I think I had to do that first for myself, and then I could figure it out.
There's more of this conversation on the Magnum version of the show, the Magnum Savage Lovecast. More guests, more calls, no ads. Subscribe now or give a subscription as a gift at savage.love. This episode is brought to you by the Meridian Trimmer, my new favorite tool for shaving down there. Meridian offers powerful trimmers that cut through even the coarsest hair, but their trimmers are gentle enough for your privates. You'll enjoy a comfortable shave below the belt with no nicks, cuts, or ingrowns. Meridian trimmers are for men, they're for women, they're for non-binary folks, and they're for any style, whether you prefer completely bare, neatly trimmed scruff, or a well-rounded bush. This high-quality waterproof trimmer is fitted with a 6,000 RPM motor, safe ceramic blades, and an anti-nick shaving guard. And Meridian has so many happy customers, over 1,000 five-star reviews online. With the Meridian trimmer, you can get your body hair looking just how you like it and feel good and sexy with your fuzz. Get a Meridian trimmer today for the ultimate trimming experience without the pain, discomfort, or awkwardness. Order now and take control of your grooming routine on your own terms. Listeners of the Savage Lovecast get an extra 15% off your order using the coupon code SAVAGE. Go to Meridian grooming.com and use the code SAVAGE for an exclusive 15% off. You deserve a better and safer below-the-belt trimming experience, and with Meridian Trimmer, you can get one today.
Hi, Dan and friends. I'm a 33-year-old cis straight-ish poly woman in the Pacific Northwest. I often hear women my age talking about how guys just want to do anything they can to get them in bed and will be deceptive around it and, you know, don't want to commit and that sort of thing. But I feel like I'm actually having the opposite problem. I meet a lot of guys that fall really hard and really quick for me, like on the first date, waxing poetic about how they manifested me into the universe and I'm everything they're looking for, and start dreaming about all the like future things that they want to do together. Suffice it to say, it's a huge turnoff for me. Even when I feel like I jived with them well on the first date and would have gotten along with them, but they kind of torpedo it with this over-the-top clinginess really early on. And this has happened like a good half a dozen times this year already on first dates, sometimes second dates. So there's a clear pattern here. I promise I'm not intending to do this as a humble brag. It genuinely makes me like really uncomfortable to be put in this position where we feel so mismatched, you know? I feel like I'm really upfront from the get-go that I'm, you know, I'm poly, I'm not looking for anything serious right now, I'm not available to see them more than once every few weeks, that I'm dating other people, et cetera. So I feel like my intentions are really clearly communicated to them, like even on the apps before we've met. And I'm just wondering what's going on here. Like, is it possible there's something I'm doing, like being too vulnerable or dressing too sexy or like sleeping with them too quickly? I often sleep with guys on the first date, sometimes second date, that makes them catch feelings quickly. Or is this one of those things that, like you always say, is just demonstrating their poor judgment and that I wouldn't really want to go out with them anyway if they do something like this? Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts and see if I can change up my dating strategy to avoid this, or what you theorize might be going on with these guys.
There's always a chance you pulled the short straw several guys in a row. You say this has happened about a half a dozen times, entirely possible that nothing that you did or could have done differently would have resulted in any other outcome but some guy crushing as hard on you as these six guys in a row crushed on you. That said, could be you telling these guys in advance, you can't have me, I am not available to you, is, you know, in the way that you might want me to. I'm not looking for a boyfriend or a husband, I don't want to be anybody's girlfriend, I'm poly. That their egos may be getting wrapped up in the chase.
And I don't think this is a conscious process, but hearing from somebody that you're attracted to and that you're into, that they're the car that you will never catch, might inspire some of these dogs to chase that car in the hopes of catching it. That car being you, those dogs being these men. Got to pick your poison, though. Like, often what I hear from women when they call the show is they're tired of guys who, if she expresses the least interest in eventually stepping out of that relationship escalator, eventually having a boyfriend or a husband, being in a committed relationship, maybe having a family, that spooks guys and they go running off in the opposite direction. Ladies, if you're listening, if you've had that experience and you'd like to experience what this caller has experienced, maybe start describing yourself as not interested in ever getting anywhere near the relationship escalator. Maybe start describing yourself as poly and only wanting something casual, and you will attract the attention of some of these guys who've been plaguing you, plaguing this caller. I don't think it's about dressing less sexy. I don't think it's about pretending to be anybody or anything that you're not. I just think that hearing from someone that you're into and that's hot, that you can't have me, that I can't be had, is going to, some people are going to react to that by feeling like they've been challenged. Guys like a challenge, guys like hurdles, guys are into the pursuit, and you laying things out, you laying your cards on the table in the way you have, is going to inspire some of those guys who may have run in the opposite direction if you'd said, I want a boyfriend and a husband and a kids, a family, a commitment, to come chasing after you. Because if they can land you, well, what does that say about how hot and desirable they are, that you let go of everything you said that you wanted or told them you didn't want for them? You know, a lot of our way we function romantically, sexually, and move through the world, it's hard to completely separate out ego and the affirmation that we may be seeking about our desirability or marketability in our relationships. And we have to be conscious of it and careful of it, that we're not pursuing someone because for shitty reasons, for egotistical reasons. And that may be what's going on with these guys. What can you do differently? Nothing. Don't do anything differently. Keep telling guys the truth. And if some guy is too clingy, like, shut him down. Don't see him again. You said, I want X, and they're like, here's Y. You say, okay, not what I wanted, and not going to make time for you again. I'm going to go find some guys who want what I want, which is not a commitment, and to see them every couple of weeks and have some great sex and hang out, experience some intimacy, but not intimacy that's bundled with commitment and hurtling toward that relationship escalator. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, I want to share a couple of listener comments about last week's show posted at savage.love. Says by Dan Fan, in your advice to the British backpacker thinking about breaking up with his girlfriend at home after cheating on her, Dan, you should have specified, do not tell her you cheated. It's bad enough to hear I'm dumping you. There's no need for him to make it worse. Otherwise, great advice. And I also loved Ring It or Fling It. Yes, Ring It or Fling It is genius. Of course, that backpacker shouldn't tell his girlfriend he cheated. She'll know something happened. She'll know something changed. She doesn't need to know that. Says David A. Boy sober is a good term. If you want to make it more activist, though, why not go with boycott? Okay, boycott. Pretty clever, but still, I prefer boy sober to boycott, because boy sober implicitly acknowledges that boys are intoxicating and can be hard to quit. Finally, says Adrian, to the newly kinky guy who is trying to be upfront about his kinks on vanilla dating apps, OKCupid has tons of questions about kink. Just answer a bunch of those and your match percentage, an admittedly flawed calculation, will increase. But moreover, you can scan people's answers for compatible or incompatible responses, including to the kink questions. Also, totally agree with Dan that it is not a crime to just meet some folks and see what happens. That's dating. Yeah, I want to emphasize once again, it is fine for kinky people to date people they assume, perhaps incorrectly, are vanilla because they didn't meet at a munch or whatever. I live for those moments. I love those stories where two people lay their kink cards on the table at the same time and they turn out to be the same cards. It happens. It doesn't happen often. When it does happen,
I want to hear about it. And thanks to everyone who I heard from this week letting me know that, contra my assertion, construct did not enter the English language when it came out of Nicholas Holt's very pretty mouth in 2018's The Favorite. For more on the history of that word, construct, you want to check out last week's Struggle Session. Struggle Session, it's a weekly bonus column for Magnum Subs. Goes up every Thursday at savage.love, and it is where you will find the Muppet-Faced Man of the Week. All right, now on to listener response calls.
Great rant at the top of the show today, Dan, but I think you need to make the point even stronger that it's not just deadly consequences that the Republicans or the religious extremists are hoping for. It's deadly consequences of sex for women, not for men, even gay men. I'm sure they're going to come after them in their own different way, but gay men don't die in childbirth. They don't die trying to obtain an abortion. This is about shaming women, controlling women, owning women, getting women out of the workforce and returning them to only the domestic sphere. This is not just a fear or a hatred of sex, although yes, it's that too. It is primarily, it is grounded in rank misogynism. And I wish that you would just make that point a little more clear, because I don't think enough people are getting it.
Hi, Dan. I was just listening to your take on watching the Super Bowl and males needing affection or touch or something, and I gotta tell you, your take is so wrong. It's ridiculous. I think some straight men enjoy sports because they grow up watching them and they grow up playing them and they enjoy the competition, and we don't get to do that as adults anymore. Our bodies don't last as long, and it's not about getting hugs or high fives or anything. It's about something we just enjoy doing and enjoy watching, and we can do it with each other. And yeah, it's oftentimes male company, so it's a good way for us to spend time with, you know, our friends. But other than that, it has nothing to do with getting hugs or being touched. That's just asinine.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about episode 905 with the daughter's concerns about her father dating a much younger woman that was homeless before they met. I definitely agree with Dan that this looks like a mutually beneficial relationship for her father and this woman, although I might be biased because this is exactly what my late father and his second wife had. As much as we didn't, and still don't, care for my father's wife, my sister and I almost breathed a sigh of relief when the impending burden of helping my dad as he got older and sicker was relieved from us. The last couple of years before my father's death were a myriad of doctor's appointments and hospital stays, particularly during COVID, and she was there for my dad every step of the way, and my sister and I never had to come into town to take care of my father. I was very lucky in that my father was a frugal, financially literate, and upper middle class person, so he proactively set up and gave me copies of his will so there were no surprises upon his death. I would recommend exactly what Dan is saying to do in terms of reaching out to him more and trying to get more information and, you know, being curious and things like that, because that advice is what made accepting my father's wife doable for my sister and I.
And we're going to leave it there. We've got three ways for you to get us your question or your comment for a future show. You can record your question or your comment at savage.love/askdan, or you can make a voice memo on your phone and email us your question or your comment to q@savage.love, or you can call us on our landline and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. Hump 2024 playing this weekend in San Francisco and Portland. I will be hosting shows in San Francisco. If you want to meet me in person, come see Hump this weekend in San Francisco. Then Hump is on to Albuquerque, Madison, Long Beach, Denver, Oakland, Bellingham, New York, Baltimore, Missoula, Vancouver, and more cities. To find out when Hump is coming to a city near you, go to humpfilmfest.com and click on tour dates. Grab tickets now for the funniest, kinkiest, dirtiest, and most entertaining Hump Film Fest ever. Follow me on Instagram and Threads at Dan Savage. Follow me at Blue Sky at Dan Savage. And you can still find me in the bad place at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Molly Roden Winter on Threads and Instagram at Molly R. Winter. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.